days to recuperate. Did Adolin's aunt blame her for botching the dueling agreement after what Adolin had decided to do last week? Well, at least his preoccupation left Shallan with some time to read and think about Urithiru. Anything other than worrying about her brothers, who still hadn't responded to her letters pleading for them to leave Yakaved and come to her. "I find sleeping very odd," Pattern said. "I know that all beings in the physical realm engage in it. Do you find it pleasant? You fear non-existence, but is not unconsciousness the same thing?"
"With sleep, it's only temporary."
"Ah, it is all right, because in the morning you each return to sentience."
"Well, that depends on the person," Shallan said absently. "For many of them, sentience might be too generous a term."
Pattern hummed, trying to sort through to the meaning of what she said. Finally, he buzzed an approximation of a laugh. Shallan cocked an eyebrow at him.
"I have guessed that what you said is humorous," Pattern said, "though I do not know why. It was not a joke. I know of jokes. A soldier came running into camp after going to see the prostitutes. He was white in the face. His friends asked if he had found a good time. He said that he had not. They asked why. He said that when he'd asked how much the woman charged, she'd said 1 mark plus the tip. He told his friends that he hadn't realized they were charging body parts now."
Shallan grimaced. "You heard that from Vatha's men, didn't you?"
"Yes. It is funny, because the word tip means several different things. A payment made in addition to the sum initially charged, usually given voluntarily, and the top piece of something. In addition, I believe that the tip means something in the slang of the soldiers, and so the man in the joke thought she was going to cut off his..."
"Yes, thank you," Shallan said.
"That is a joke," Pattern continued. "I understand why it is funny. Ha ha. Sarcasm is similar. You replace unexpected result with one grossly unexpected, and the humor is in the juxtaposition. But why was your earlier comment funny?"
"It's debatable whether it was at this point."
"But, Pattern, nothing is less funny than explaining humor," Shallan said. "We have more important things to discuss." "Such as why you have forgotten how to make your images produce sound? You did it once long ago."
Shallan blinked, then held up the modern map. "The capital of Natanatan was here on the Shattered Plains. The old maps are misleading. Amaram notes that the Parshendi use weapons of masterly design, far beyond their skill in craftsmanship. Where would they have gotten those? From the ruins of the city that once was here." Shallan dug in her stacks of papers, getting out a map of the city itself. It didn't show the surrounding area. It was just a city map, and a rather vague one, taken from a book she'd purchased. She thought it was the one that Yasna referenced in her notes. The merchant she'd bought it from claimed it was ancient, that it was a copy of a copy from a book in Aesir that claimed to be a drawing of a tile mosaic depiction of the city of Stormseat. The mosaic no longer existed. So much of what they had of the Shadow Days came from fragments like these. "Scholars reject the idea that Stormseat was here on the plains," Shallan said. "They say that the craters of the war camps don't match the descriptions of the city. Instead, they propose that the ruins must be hidden up in the highlands, where you indicated. But Yasna didn't agree with them. She points out that few of the scholars have actually been here, and that this area in general is poorly explored."
Pattern said.
"Shallan, I agree with Yasna," Shallan said, turning from him. "Stormseat wasn't a large city. It could have been in the middle of the plains, and these craters something else. Amaram says here he thinks they might once have been domes. I wonder if that is even possible. They'd be so large. Anyway, this might have been a satellite city of some sort."
Shallan felt like she was getting close to something. Amram's notes spoke mostly of trying to meet with the Parshendi, to ask them about the Voidbringers and how to return them. He did mention Urithiru, however, and seemed to have come to the same conclusion as Yasna, that the ancient city of Stormseat would have contained a path to Urithiru. 10 of them had once connected the 10 capitals of the Epic Kingdoms to Urithiru, which had some kind of conference room for the 10 monarchs of the Epic Kingdoms, and a throne for each one. That was why none of the maps placed the holy city in the same location. It was ridiculous to walk there. Instead, you made for the nearest city with an oath gate and used that. He's searching for the information there, Shallan thought, same as I am. But he wants to return the Voidbringers, not fight them. Why? She held up the antique map of Stormseat, the copy from the mosaic. It had artistic stylings instead of specific indications of things like distance and location. While she appreciated the former, the latter was truly frustrating. Are you on here? She thought. The secret, the oath gate. Are you here on this dais, as Yasna thought? The shattered plains haven't always been shattered, Shallan whispered to herself. That's what the scholars, all but Yasna, are missing. Stormseat was destroyed during the last desolation, but it was so long ago. Nobody talks about how. Fire? Earthquake? No, something more terrible. The city was broken, like a piece of fine dinnerware hit with a hammer. Shallan, Pattern said, moving closer to her. I know that you have forgotten much of what once was. Those lies attracted me. But you cannot continue like this. You must admit the truth about me, about what I can do, and what we have done. More. You must know yourself, and remember. She sat cross-legged on the too nice bed. Memories tried to claw their way out of the boxes inside her head. Those memories all pointed one way, toward carpet bloodied, and carpet not. You wish to help, Pattern said. You wish to prepare for the Everstorm, the spren of the unnatural one. You must become something. I did not come to you merely to teach you tricks of light.
You came to learn, Shallan said, staring at her map. That's what you said?
I came to learn. We became to do something greater.
Would you have me unable to laugh? She demanded, suddenly holding back tears. Would you have me crippled? That is what those memories will do to me. I can be what I am because I cut them off. An image formed in front of her, born of stormlight, created by instinct. She hadn't needed to draw this image first, for she knew it too well. The image was of herself, Shallan, as she should be, curled in a huddle on the bed, unable to weep, for she had long since run out of tears. This girl, not a woman, a girl, flinched whenever spoken to. She expected everyone to shout at her. She could not laugh, for laughter had been squeezed from her by a childhood of darkness and pain. That was the real Shallan. She knew it as surely as she knew her own name. The person she had become instead was a lie, one she had fabricated in the name of survival. To remember herself as a child, discovering light in the gardens, patterns in the stonework, and dreams that became real.
Such a deep lie, Pattern whispered. A deep lie, indeed. But still, you must obtain your abilities. Learn again, if you have to.
Very well, Shallan said. But if we did this before, can't you just tell me how it is done?
My memory is weak, Pattern said. I was dumb so long. Nearly dead. I could not speak.
Yeah, Shallan said, remembering him spinning on the ground and running into the wall. He were kind of cute, though.
She banished the image of the frightened, huddled, whimpering girl, then got out her drawing implements. She tapped a pencil against her lips, then did something simple. A drawing of Vale, the dark-eyed con woman. Vale was not Shallan. Her features were different enough that the two of them would be distinct individuals to anyone who happened to see them both. Still, Vale did bear echoes of Shallan. She was a dark-eyed, tan-skinned, Alethi version of Shallan. A Shallan that was a few years older and had a pointier nose and chin. Finished with the drawing, Shallan breathed out Stormlight and created the image. It stood beside the bed, arms folded, looking as confident as a master duelist facing a child with a stick. Sound. How would she do sound? Pattern had called it a force, part of the surge of illumination, or at least similar to it. She situated herself on the bed, one leg folded beneath her, inspecting Vale. Over the next hour, Shallan tried everything she could think of, from straining herself and concentrating, to trying to draw sounds to make them appear. Nothing worked. Finally, she climbed off the bed and walked to get herself a drink from the bottle chilling in the bucket in the next room. As she approached it, however, she felt a tugging inside of her. She looked over her shoulder into the bedroom and saw that the image of Vale had started to blur, like smudged pencil lines. Blast, but that was inconvenient. Sustaining the illusion required Shallan to provide a constant source of Stormlight. She walked back into the bedroom and set a sphere on the floor inside of Vale's foot. When she walked away, the illusion still grew indistinct, like a bubble preparing to pop. Shallan turned and put her hands on her hips, staring at the version of Vale that had gone all fuzzy. Annoying, she snapped. Pattern hummed. I'm sorry that your mystical godlike powers do not instantly work as you would like them to. She raised an eyebrow at him. I thought you didn't understand humor. I do. I just explained. He paused for a moment. Was I being funny? Sarcasm. I was sarcastic. By accident.
He seemed surprised, even gleeful. I guess you're learning.
It is the bond, he explained. In Shadesmar, I do not communicate this way, this human way. My connection to you gives me the means by which I can manifest in the physical realm as more than a mindless glimmer. It links me to you, helps me communicate as you do. Fascinating.
He settled down like a trumping axe hound, perfectly content. And then Shallan noticed something. I'm not glowing, Shallan said. I'm holding a lot of Stormlight, but I'm not glowing.
Pattern said. Large illusion transforms the surge into another, feeds off your Stormlight.
She nodded. The Stormlight she held fed the illusion, drawing the excess from her that would normally float above her skin. That could be useful. As Pattern moved up onto the bed, Vale's elbow, which was closest to him, grew more distinct. Shallan frowned. Pattern, move closer to the image. He obliged, crossing the cover of her bed toward where Vale stood. She unfuzzed. Not completely, but his presence made a noticeable difference. Shallan walked over, her proximity making the illusion snap back to full clarity. Can you hold Stormlight? Shallan asked Pattern.
Investiture is the means by which I...
Here, Shallan said, pressing her hand down on him, muffling his words to an annoyed buzzing. It was an odd sensation,
as if she'd trapped an angry Kremlin under the bedsheets. She pushed some stormlight into him. When she lifted her hand, he was trailing wisps of it, like steam off a hot plate fabrial. "We're bonded," she said. "My illusion is your illusion. I'm going to get a drink. See if you can keep the image from breaking apart." She backed to the sitting room and smiled. Pattern, still buzzing with annoyance, moved down off the bed. She couldn't see him. The bed was in the way. But she guessed he'd gone to Vale's feet. It worked. The illusion stayed. "Ha," Shallan said, getting herself a cup of wine. She walked back and eased onto the bed. Flopping down with a cup of red wine did not seem prudent, and looked over the side at the floor, where Pattern sat beneath Vale. He was visible because of the stormlight. "I'll need to take that into account," Shallan thought. "Build illusions so that he can hide in them."
"It worked," Pattern said. "How did you know it would work?"
"I didn't," Shallan took a sip of wine. "I guessed." She drank another sip as Pattern hummed. "Yasna would not have approved. Scholarship requires a sharp mind and alert senses. These do not mix with alcohol." Shallan drank the rest of the wine in a gulp. "Here," Shallan said, reaching down. She did the next bit by instinct. She had a connection to the illusion and she had a connection to Pattern, so with a push of stormlight, she attached the illusion to Pattern as she often attached them to herself. His glow subsided. "Walk around," she said.
"I don't walk," Pattern said.
"You know what I mean," Shallan said. Pattern moved, and the image moved with him. It didn't walk, unfortunately. The image just kind of glided, like light reflected onto the wall from a spoon you idly turned in your hands. She cheered to herself anyway. After so long failing to get sounds from one of her creations, this different discovery seemed a major victory. Could she get it to move more naturally? She settled down with her sketch pad and started drawing. 61. Obedience. 1.5 years ago. Shallan became the perfect daughter. She kept quiet, particularly in father's presence. She spent most days in her room sitting by the window, reading the same books over and over, or sketching the same objects again and again. He had proven several times by this point that he would not touch her if she angered him. Instead, he would beat others in her name. The only times she allowed herself to drop the mask was when she was with her brothers, times when her father couldn't hear. Her three brothers often cajoled her with an edge of desperation to tell them stories from her books. For their hearing only, she made jokes, poked fun at father's visitors, and invented extravagant tales by the hearth. Such an insignificant way to fight back. She felt a coward for not doing more. But surely, surely things would get better now. Indeed, as Shallan was involved more by the Ardents in accounts, she noted a shrewdness to the way her father stopped being bullied by other light eyes and started playing them against each other. He impressed her but frightened her in how he seized for power. Father's fortunes changed further when a new marble deposit was discovered on his lands, providing resources to keep up with his promises, bribes, and deals. Surely that would make him start laughing again. Surely that would drive the darkness from his eyes. It did not.
"She is too low for you to marry," father said, setting down his mug. "I won't have it, Balat. You will break off contact with that woman."
"She belongs to a good family," Balat said, standing, palms on the table.
It was lunch, and so Shallan was expected to be here, rather than remaining shut up in her room. She sat to the side at her private table. Balat stood facing father across the high table.
"Father, they're your vassals. Balat snapped. You yourself have invited them to dine with us.
My axe hounds dine at my feet, Father said. I do not allow my sons to court them. House Tavanar is not nearly ambitious enough for us. Now, Sudi Valam, that might be worth considering.
Balat frowned.
The High Prince's daughter? You can't be serious. She's in her 50s. She is single.
Because her husband died in a duel. Anyway, the High Prince would never approve it.
His perception of us will change, Father said. We are a wealthy family now, with much influence.
It's still headed by a murderer, Balat snapped. Too far, Shallan thought. On Father's other side, Luesh laced his fingers in front of him. The new house steward had a face like a well-worn glove, leathery and wrinkled in the places most used, notably the frown lines. Father stood up slowly. This new anger of his, the cold anger, terrified Shallan.
Your new axe-hound pups, he said to Balat. Terrible that they caught a sickness during the latest high storm. Tragic. It is unfortunate they need to be put down.
He gestured, and one of his new guards, a man Shallan did not know well, stepped outside, pulling his sword from its sheath. Shallan grew very cold. Even Luesh grew concerned, placing a hand on Father's arm.
You bastard, Balat said, growing pale. You'll what, Balat?
Father asked, shaking off Luesh's touch, leaning toward Balat.
Come on, say it. Will you challenge me? Don't think I wouldn't kill you if you did. Wakim may be a pathetic wreck, but he will serve just as well as you for what this house needs.
Helleran is back, Balat said.
Father froze, hands on the table, unmoving.
I saw him 2 days ago, Balat said. He sent for me and I rode out to meet him in the city.
Helleran, that name is not to be spoken in this house, Father said. I mean it, non-Balat. Never.
Balat met his father's gaze, and Shallan counted 10 beats of her thumping heart before Balat broke the stare and looked away. Father sat down, looking exhausted as Balat stalked out of the room. The hall fell completely silent, Shallan too frightened to speak. Father eventually stood up, shoving his chair back and leaving. Luesh trailed soon after. That left Shallan alone with the servants. Timidly, she stood up, then went after Balat. He was in the kennel. The guard had worked swiftly. Balat's new pod of pups lay dead in a pool of violet blood on the stone floor. She'd encouraged Balat to breed these. He'd been making progress with his demons over the years. He rarely hurt anything larger than a kremling. Now he sat on a box, looking down at the small corpses, horrified. Painspren cluttered the ground near him. The metal gate into the kennel rattled as Shallan pushed it open. She raised her safe hand to her mouth as she drew closer to the pitiful remains.
Father's guards, Balat said. It's like they were waiting for a chance to do something like this. I don't like the new group he has. That Levrin with the angry eyes and Rin, that one frightens me. Whatever happened to Ten and Beel? Soldiers that you could joke with. Almost friends.
She rested a hand on his shoulder. Balat, did you really see Helleran?
Yes. He said I wasn't to tell anyone. He warned me that this time when he left he might not be coming back for a long time. He told me to watch over the family.
Balat buried his head in his hands.
I can't be him, Shallan.
You don't need to be.
He's brave. He's strong.
He abandoned us. Balat looked up, tears running down his cheeks.
Maybe he was right. Maybe that's the only way, Shallan.
Leave our house?
What of it? Balat asked.
You spend every day locked away, brought out only for father to display. Jushu has gone back to his gambling, you know he has, even if he's smarter about it. Wakim talks about becoming an Ardent, but I don't know if father will ever let go of him. He's insurance.
It was unfortunately a good argument. Where would we go? Shallan asked. We have nothing.
I have nothing here either, Balat said. I'm not going to give up on Elita, Shallan. She's the only beautiful thing that has happened in my life. If she and I have to go live in Vaidnar as 10th Dawn with me working as a house guard or something like that, we'll do it. Doesn't that seem a better life than this?
He gestured toward the dead pups. Perhaps.
Would you go with me? If I took Elita and left? You could be a scribe. Earn your own way. Be free of father.
No. I need to stay.
Why?
Something has hold of father, something awful. If we all leave, we give him to it. Someone has to help him.
Why do you defend him so? You know what he did.
He didn't do it.
You can't remember, Balat said. You've told me over and over that your mind blanks. You saw him kill her, but you don't want to admit that you witnessed it. Storms, Shallan. You're as broken as Wakim and Jushu, as I am sometimes.
She shook off her numbness. It doesn't matter, she said. If you go, are you going to take Wakim and Jushu with you?
I couldn't afford to, Balat said. Jushu in particular. We'd have to live lean, and I couldn't trust that he'd, you know. But if you came, it might be easier for one of us to find work. You're better at writing and art than Elita.
No, Balat, Shallan said, frightened of how eager a part of her was to say yes to him. I can't, particularly if Jushu and Wakim remain here.
I see, he said. Maybe there's another way out. I'll think.
She left him in the kennel, worried that father would find her there and that it would upset him. She entered the manor, but couldn't help feeling that she was trying to hold together a carpet as dozens of people pulled out threads from the sides. What would happen if Balat left? He backed down from fights with father, but at least he resisted. Wakim merely did what he was told, and Jushu was still a mess. We have to just weather this, Shallan thought. Stop provoking father. Let him relax. Then he'll come back. She climbed the steps and passed father's door. It was open a crack. She could hear him inside.
Find him. In Valath, father said. Nanvalat claims to have met him in the city, and that is what he must have meant. It will be done, Bright Lord.
That voice. It was Rin, captain of father's new guards. Shallan backed up, peeking into the room. Father's strongbox shone behind the picture on the back wall, bright light bursting through the canvas. To her it was almost blinding, though the men in the room didn't seem able to see it. Rin bowed before father, hand on sword.
Bring me his head, Rin, father said. I want to see it with my own eyes. He is the one who could ruin all of this. Surprise him. Kill him before he can summon his shard blade. That weapon will be yours in payment so long as you serve House D'Var.
Shallan stumbled back from the door before father could look up and see her. Helleran! Father had just ordered Helleran's assassination. I have to do something. I have to warn him.
How?
Could Balat contact him again? Shallan,
how dare you? Said a feminine voice within.
Stunned silence followed. Shallan edged back to look into the room. Malise, her stepmother, stood in the doorway between the bedroom and the sitting room. The small, plump woman had never seemed threatening to Shallan before, but the storm on her face today could have frightened a white spine.
Your own son, Malise said. Have you no morals left? Have you no compassion?
He is no longer my son,
Father growled.
I believed your story about the woman before me, Malise said. I've supported you. I've lived with this cloud over the house. Now I hear this. It is one thing to beat the servants, but to kill your son?
Father whispered something to Rin. Shallan jumped and barely got down the hallway to her room before the man slipped out of the room, then closed Father's door with a click. Shallan shut herself in her room as the shouting started, a violent, angry back and forth between Malise and her father. Shallan huddled up beside the bed, tried to use a pillow to keep out the sounds. When she thought it was over, she removed the pillow. Her father stormed out into the hallway.
Why will nobody in this house obey?
He shouted, thumping down the stairs.
This wouldn't happen if you all just obeyed.
62. The One Who Killed Promises. This, I suspect, a little like a skunk naming itself for its stench. Life continued in Kaladin's cell. Though the accommodations were nice for a dungeon, he found himself wishing he were back in the slave wagon. At least then he'd been able to watch the scenery. Fresh air, wind, an occasional rinse in the High Storm's last rains. Life certainly hadn't been good, but it had been better than being locked away and forgotten. They took the spheres away at night, abandoning him to blackness. In the dark, he found himself imagining that he was someplace deep, with miles of stone above him and no pathway out, no hope of rescue. He could not conceive a worse death. Better to be gutted on the battlefield, looking up at the open sky as your life leaked away. Light awoke him. He sighed, watching the ceiling as the guards, light-eyed soldiers he didn't know, replaced the lamp spheres. Day after day, everything was the storming same in here, waking to the frail light of spheres, which only made him wish for the sun. The servant arrived to give him his breakfast. He'd placed his chamber pot in reach of the opening at the bottom of the bars, and it scraped stone as she pulled it out and replaced it with a fresh one. She scurried away. He frightened her. With a groan at stiff muscles, Kaladin sat up and regarded his meal. Flatbread stuffed with bean paste. He stood, waving away some strange spren like taut wires crossing before him, then forced himself to do a set of push-ups. Keeping his strength up would be difficult if the imprisonment continued too long. Perhaps he could ask for some stones to use for training. Was this what happened to Moash's grandparents? Kaladin wondered, taking the food. Waiting for a trial until they died in prison? Kaladin sat back on his bench, nibbling on the flatbread. There'd been a high storm yesterday, but he'd barely been able to hear it, locked away in this room. He heard Syl humming nearby, but couldn't find where she'd gone. Syl? He asked. She kept hiding from him.
There was a cryptic at the fight, her voice said softly.
You mentioned those before, didn't you? A type of spren?
A revolting type.
She paused.
But not evil, I don't think.
She sounded begrudging.
I was going to follow it as it fled, but you needed me. When I went back to look, it was hidden from me.
What does it mean? Kaladin asked, frowning.
Cryptics like to plan,
Syl said slowly, as if recalling something long lost.
Yes, I remember. They debate and watch and never do anything. But...
What? Kaladin asked, rising.
They're looking for someone, Syl said. I've seen the signs. Soon you might not be alone, Kaladin.
Looking for someone. To choose, like him, as a surge binder? What kind of knight radiant had been made by a group of spren Syl so obviously detested? It didn't seem like someone he'd want to get to know. Oh, storms, Kaladin thought, sitting back down. if they choose Adolin. The thought should have made him sick. Instead, he found Syl's revelation oddly comforting. Not being alone, even if it did turn out to be Adolin, made him feel better and drove away some small measure of his gloom. As he was finishing his meal, a thump came from the hallway. The door opening? Only Light Eyes could visit him, though so far none had, unless you counted Wit. The storm catches everyone, eventually. Dalinar Kholin stepped into the room. Despite his sour thoughts, Kaladin's immediate reaction, drilled into him over the years, was to stand and salute hand to breast. This was his commanding officer. He felt an idiot as soon as he did it. He stood behind bars and saluted the man who'd put him here. At ease, Dalinar said with a nod. The wide-shouldered man stood with hands clasped behind his back. Something about Dalinar was imposing even when he was relaxed. He looks like the generals from the stories, Kaladin thought. Thick of face and graying of hair, solid in the same way that a brick was. He didn't wear a uniform. The uniform wore him. Dalinar Kholin represented an ideal that Kaladin had long since decided was a mere fancy. How are your accommodations? Dalinar asked.
Sir, I'm in Storming Prison.
A smile cracked Dalinar's face. So I see. Calm yourself, soldier. If I'd ordered you to guard a room for a week, would you have done it? Yes? Then consider this your duty. Guard this room. I'll make sure nobody unauthorized runs off with the chamber pots, sir. Elikar is coming around. He's finished cooling off and now only worries that releasing you too quickly will make him look weak. I'll need you to stay here for a few more days, then we'll draft a formal pardon for your crime and have you reinstated to your position.
I don't see that I have any choice, sir.
Dalinar stepped closer to the bars. This is hard for you. Kaladin nodded. You are well cared for, as are your men. Two of your bridgemen guard the way into the building at all times. There is nothing to worry you, soldier. If it's your reputation with me...
Sir,
Kaladin said, I guess I'm just not convinced that the king will ever let me go. He has a history of letting inconvenient people rot in dungeons until they die. As soon as he said the words, Kaladin couldn't believe they'd come from his lips. They sounded insubordinate, even treasonous. But they'd been sitting there, in his mouth, demanding to be spoken. Dalinar remained in his posture with his hands clasped behind his back. You speak of the silversmiths back in Kholinar? So he did know.
Stormfather. Had Dalinar been involved?
Kaladin nodded. How did you hear of that incident? From one of my men, Kaladin said. He knew the imprisoned people. I had hoped we could escape those rumors, Dalinar said. But of course, rumor grows like lichen, crusted on and impossible to completely scrub free. What happened with those people was a mistake, soldier. I'll admit that freely. The same won't happen to you. Are the rumors about them true, then? I would really rather not speak of the Roshon affair.
Roshon.
Kaladin remembered screams, blood on the floor of his father's surgery room, a dying boy. A day in the rain, a day when one man tried to steal away Kaladin's light. He eventually succeeded.
Roshon,
Kaladin whispered. Yes, a minor Light Eyes, Dalinar said, sighing.
Sir, it's important that I know of this. For my own peace of mind.
Dalinar looked him up and down. Kaladin just stared straight ahead, mind numb.
Roshon.
Everything had started to go wrong when Roshon had arrived in Hearthstone to be the new city lord. Before then, Kaladin's father had been respected. When that horrid man had arrived, dragging petty jealousy behind him like a cloak, the world had twisted upon itself. Roshon had infected Hearthstone like rot spren on an unclean wound. He was the reason Tien had gone to war. He was the reason Kaladin had followed.
"I suppose I owe you this," Dalinar said, "but it is not to be spread around. Roshon was a petty man who gained Elakar's ear. Elakar was crown prince then, commanded to rule over Kolinar and watch the kingdom while his father organized our first camps here in the Shattered Plains. I was away at the time. Anyway, do not blame Elakar. He was taking the advice of someone he trusted. Roshon, however, sought his own interests instead of those of the throne. He owned several silversmith shops. Well, the details are not important. Suffice it to say that Roshon led the prince to make some errors. I cleared it up when I returned."
"You saw this Roshon punished?" Kaladin asked, voice soft, feeling numb.
"Exiled," Dalinar said, nodding. "Elakar moved the man to a place where he couldn't do any more harm."
"A place he couldn't do any more harm." Kaladin almost laughed.
"You have something to say?"
"You don't want to know what I think, sir."
"Perhaps I don't. I probably need to hear it anyway."
Dalinar was a good man. Blinded in some ways, but a good man.
"Well, sir," Kaladin said, controlling his emotions with difficulty, "I find it troubling that a man like this Roshon could be responsible for the deaths of innocent people, yet escape prison."
"It's complicated, soldier. Roshon was one of High Prince Sadius's sworn liegemen, cousin to important men whose support we needed. I originally argued that Roshon should be stripped of station and made a tenor, forced to live his life in squalor. But this would have alienated allies and could have undermined the kingdom. Elakar argued for leniency toward Roshon, and his father agreed via Spanreed. I relented, figuring that mercy was not an attribute I should discourage in Elakar."
"Of course not," Kaladin said, clenching his teeth. "Though it seems that such mercy often ends up serving the cousins of powerful light eyes, and rarely someone lowly."
He stared through the bars between himself and Dalinar.
"Soldier," Dalinar asked, voice cool, "do you think I've been unfair toward you or your men?"
"You? No, sir. But this isn't about you."
Dalinar exhaled softly as if in frustration.
"Captain, you and your men are in a unique position. You spend your daily lives around the king. You don't see the face that is presented to the world. You see the man. It has ever been so for close bodyguards. So your loyalty needs to be extra firm and generous. Yes, the man you guard has flaws. Every man does. He is still your king, and I will have your respect."
"I can and do respect the throne, sir,"
Kaladin said. Not the man sitting in it, perhaps. But he did respect the office. Somebody needed to rule.
"Son," Dalinar said after a moment's thought, "do you know why I put you into the position that I did? You said it was because you needed someone you could trust not to be a spy for Sadius."
"That's the rationale," Dalinar said, stepping up closer to the bars, only inches from Kaladin.
"But it's not the reason. I did it because it felt right."
Kaladin frowned.
"I trust my hunches," Dalinar said. "My gut said you were a man who could help change this kingdom. A man who could live through damnation itself in Sadius's camp and still somehow inspire others was a man I wanted under my command."
His expression grew darker.
"I gave you a position no dark eyes has ever held in this army. I let you into conferences with the king, and I listened when you spoke. Do not make me regret those decisions, soldier.
You don't already? Kaladin asked.
I've come close, Dalinar said. I understand, though. If you truly believe what you told me about Amaram, well, if I'd been in your place, I'd have been hard-pressed not to do the same thing you did. But storm it, man! You're still a Dark Eyes. It shouldn't matter. Maybe it shouldn't, but it does. You want to change that? Well, you're not going to do it by screaming like a lunatic and challenging men like Amaram to duels. You'll do it by distinguishing yourself in the position I gave you. Be the kind of man that others admire, whether they be light-eyed or dark. Convince Elokar that a Dark Eyes can lead. That will change the world.
Dalinar turned and walked away. Kaladin couldn't help thinking that the man's shoulders seemed more bowed than when he'd entered. After Dalinar left, Kaladin sat back on his bench, letting out a long, annoyed breath.
Stay calm, he whispered. Do as you're told, Kaladin. Stay in your cage.
He's trying to help, Syl said.
Kaladin glanced to the side.
Where was she hiding?
You heard about Roshon.
Silence.
Yes,
Syl finally said, voice sounding small. My family's poverty, Kaladin said. The way the town ostracized us, Tien being forced into the army. These things were all Roshon's fault. Elokar sent him to us.
Syl didn't respond. Kaladin fished a bit of flatbread from his bowl, chewing on it.
Stormfather, Moash really was right. This kingdom would be better off without Elokar. Dalinar tried his best, but he had an enormous blind spot regarding his nephew. It was time someone stepped in and cut the ties binding Dalinar's hands. For the good of the kingdom, for the good of Dalinar Kholin himself, the king had to die. Some people, like a festering finger or a leg shattered beyond repair, just needed to be removed.
63. A Burning World. Now look what you've made me say. You've always been able to bring out the most extreme in me, old friend. And I do still name you a friend, for all that you weary me.
What are you doing? The Span Reed wrote to Shallan. Nothing much, she wrote back by sphere light. Just working on Sabariel's income ledgers. She peeked out through the hole in her illusion, regarding the street far below. People flowed through the city as if marching to some strange rhythm. A dribble, then a burst, then back to a dribble. Rarely a constant flow. What caused that? You want to come visit? The pen wrote. This is getting really boring. Sorry, she wrote back to Adolin. I really need to get this work done. It might be nice to have a Span Reed conversation to keep me company, though. Pattern hummed softly beside her at the lie. Shallan had used an illusion to expand the size of the shed atop this tenement in Sabariel's war camp, providing a hidden place to sit and watch the street below. 5 hours of waiting, comfortable enough, with the stool and spheres for light, had revealed nothing. Nobody had approached the lone stone-barked tree growing beside the pathway. She didn't know the species. It was too old to have been planted there recently. It must predate Sabariel's arrival. The gnarled, sturdy bark made her think it was some variety of dendrolith, but the tree also had long fronds that rose into the air like streamers, twisting and fluttering in the wind. Those were reminiscent of a dale willow. She'd already done a sketch. She would look it up in her books later. The tree was used to people, and didn't pull in its fronds as they passed it. If someone had approached carefully enough to avoid brushing the fronds, Shallan would have spotted them. If instead they'd moved quickly, the fronds would have felt the vibrations and withdrawn, which she also would have spotted. She was reasonably certain that if anyone had tried to fetch the item in the tree, she'd have known it, even if she'd been looking away for a moment. "I suppose," the pen wrote, "I can continue to keep you company. Shuren isn't doing anything else." Shuren was the Ardent who wrote for Adolin today, come to visit by Adolin's order. The prince had pointedly noted that he was using an Ardent rather than one of his father's scribes. Did he think she'd grow jealous if he used another woman for scribing duties? He did seem surprised that she didn't get jealous. Were the women of the court so petty? Or was Shallan the odd one, too relaxed? His eyes did wander, and she had to admit that wasn't something that pleased her. And there was his reputation to consider. Adolin was said to have, in the past, changed relationships as frequently as other men changed coats. Perhaps she should cling more firmly, but the thought of it nauseated her. Such behavior reminded her of father, holding so tightly to everything that he eventually broke it all. "Yes," she wrote back to Adolin, using the board set on a box beside her. "I'm certain the good Ardent has nothing at all better to do than transcribe notes between two courting light eyes." "He's an Ardent," Adolin sent. "He likes to serve. It's what they do." "I thought," she wrote, "that saving souls was what they did." "He's tired of that," Adolin sent. "He told me that he already saved 3 this morning." She smiled, checking on the tree. Still no change. "He did he?" she wrote. "Has them tucked away in his back pocket for safekeeping, I assume?" No. Father's way was not right. If she wanted to keep Adolin, she had to try something far more difficult than just clinging to him. She'd have to be so irresistible that he didn't want to let go. Unfortunately, this was one area where neither Yasna's training nor Tin's would help. Yasna had been indifferent toward men, while Tin had not talked about keeping men, only distracting them for a quick con. "Is your father feeling better?" she wrote. "Yes, actually. He's been up and about since yesterday, looking as strong as ever." "Good to hear," she wrote. The two continued exchanging idle comments, Shallan watching the tree. Moraes's note had instructed her to come at sunrise and search the hole in the tree trunk for her instructions. So she'd come 4 hours early, while the sky was still dark, and sneaked up to the top of this building to watch. Apparently she hadn't come early enough. She'd really wanted to get a view of them placing the instructions. "I don't like this," Shallan said, whispering to Pattern and ignoring the pen, which scribed Adolin's next line to her. "Why didn't Moraes just give me the instructions via span read? Why make me come here?" Pattern said from the floor beneath her. The sun had long since risen. She needed to go get the instructions, but still she hesitated, tapping her finger against the paper-covered board beside her. "They're watching," she realized.
"What?"
Pattern said. "They are doing exactly what I did. They are hiding somewhere and want to watch me pick up the instructions."
"Why? What does it accomplish?"
"It gives them information," Shallan said. "And that is the sort of thing these people thrive upon." She leaned to the side, peering out of her hole, which would appear from the outside as a gap between two of the bricks. She didn't think Moraes wanted her dead, despite the sickening incident with the poor carriage driver. He'd given leave for the others around him to kill her if they feared her. But that, like so much about Moraes, had been a test. "If you really are strong and clever enough to join us," that incident implied, "then you'll avoid being assassinated by these people." This was another test. How did she pass it in a way that didn't leave anyone dead this time? They'd be watching for her to come get her instructions. but there weren't many good places to keep an eye on the tree. If she were Murray's and his people, where would she go to observe? She felt silly thinking it. Pattern, she whispered. Go look in the windows of this building that face the street. See if anyone is sitting in one of them, watching as we are.
Very well, he said, sliding out of her illusion.
She was suddenly conscious of the fact that Moraes' people might be hiding somewhere very close, but shoved aside her nervousness, reading Adolin's reply. Good news, by the way, the pen wrote. Father visited last night, and we talked at length. He's preparing his expedition out onto the plains to fight the Parshendi, once and for all. Part of getting ready involves some scouting missions in the coming days. I got him to agree to bring you out onto the plateaus during one of them. And we can find a chrysalis? Shallan asked. Well, the pen wrote, even if the Parshendi aren't fighting over those anymore, Father doesn't take risks. I can't bring you on a run when there is a chance they might come and contest us. But I've been thinking we can probably arrange the scouting mission so it passes by a plateau with a chrysalis a day or so after it was harvested. Shallan frowned. A dead harvested chrysalis? She wrote. I don't know how much that will tell me. Well, Adolin replied, it's better than not seeing one at all, right? And you did say you wanted the chance to cut one up. This is almost the same thing. He was right. Besides, getting out onto the plains was the real goal. Let's do it. When?
In a few days.
Shallan!
She jumped, but it was only Pattern, buzzing with excitement.
You were right, he said. She watches below, only one level down, second room.
She?
The one with the mask.
Shallan shivered. Now what? Go back to her rooms? Then write to Moraes and say that she didn't appreciate being spied upon? It wouldn't accomplish anything useful. Looking down at her pad of paper, she realized that her relationship with Moraes was similar to her relationship with Adolin. In both cases, she couldn't just do as expected. She needed to excite, exceed. I'll need to go, she wrote to Adolin. Sabariel is asking for me. It might take me a while. She clicked off the span reed and tucked it and the board away in her satchel. Not her usual one, but a rugged bag with a leather strap that went over her shoulder, like Vale would carry. Then, before she could lose her nerve, she ducked out of her illusory hiding place. She put her back to the wall of the shed, facing away from the street, then touched the side of the illusion and withdrew the stormlight. That made the illusory section of wall vanish, quickly breaking down and streaming into her hand. Hopefully nobody had been looking at the shed at that moment. If they had been, though, they would probably just think the change a trick of the eyes. Next she knelt and used stormlight to infuse Pattern and bind to him an image of Vale from a drawing she'd done earlier. Shallan nodded for him to move, and as he did, the image of Vale walked. She looked good, a confident stride, a swishing coat, peaked hat shading her face against the sun. The illusion even blinked and turned her head on occasion, as prescribed by the drawing sequence Shallan had done earlier. She watched, hesitating. Was that actually how she looked while wearing Vale's face and clothing? She didn't feel nearly that poised, and the clothing always seemed exaggerated, even silly, to her. On this image, it looked appropriate. Go down, Shallan whispered to Pattern, and walk to the tree. Try to approach carefully, slowly, and buzz loudly to get the tree's leaves to pull back. Stand at the trunk for a moment as if retrieving the thing inside, then walk to the alleyway between this building and the next.
Yes,
Pattern said. He zipped off toward the stairs, excited to be part of the lie. Slower, Shallan said, wincing to see Vale's pace not matching her speed. As we practiced. Pattern slowed and reached the steps. Vale's image moved down them, awkwardly. The illusion could walk and stand still on flat ground, but other terrain, such as steps, wasn't accommodated. To anyone watching, it would seem like Vale was stepping on nothing and gliding down the stairs. Well, it was the best they could do for the moment. Shallan took a deep breath and pulled on her hat, breathing out a second image, one that covered her over and transformed her into Vale. The one on pattern would remain so long as he had Stormlight. That Stormlight drained from him a lot faster than it did from Shallan, though. She didn't know why. She went down the steps, but only one level, walking as quietly as she could. She counted over two doors in the dim hallway. The masked woman was inside that one. Shallan left it alone, instead ducking into an alcove by the stairwell, where she would be hidden from anyone in the hallway. She waited. A door eventually clicked open, and clothing rustled in the hallway. The masked woman passed Shallan's hiding place, amazingly quiet as she moved down the steps. "What is your name?" Shallan asked. The woman froze on the steps. She spun, gloved safe hand on the knife at her side, and saw Shallan standing in the alcove. The woman's masked eyes flicked back toward the room she'd left. "I sent a double," Shallan said. "Wearing my clothing. That's what you saw." The woman did not move, still crouched on the steps. "Why did he want you to follow me?" Shallan asked. "He's that interested in finding out where I'm staying?" "No," the woman finally said. "The instructions in the tree call for you to set about a task immediately, with no time to waste." Shallan frowned, considering. "So your job wasn't to follow me home, but to follow me on the mission? To watch how I accomplished it?" The woman said nothing. Shallan strolled forward and seated herself on the top step, crossing her arms on her legs. "So what is the job?" "The instructions are in..." "I'd rather hear it from you," Shallan said. "Call me lazy." "How did you find me?" the woman asked. "A sharp-eyed ally," Shallan said. "I told him to watch the windows, then send me word of where you were." "I was waiting up above," she grimaced. "I was hoping to catch one of you placing the instructions." "We placed them before even contacting you," the woman said. She hesitated, then took a few steps upward. "Iatil," Shallan cocked her head. "My name," the woman said. "Iatil. I've never heard one like it." "Unsurprising. Your task today was to investigate a certain new arrival into Dalinar's camp. We wish to know about this person, and Dalinar's allegiances are uncertain." "He's loyal to the king and the throne." "Outwardly," the woman said. "His brother knew things of an extraordinary nature. We are uncertain if Dalinar was told of these things or not, and his interactions with Amaram worry us. This newcomer is linked." "Amaram is making maps of the Shattered Plains," Shallan said. "Why? What is out there that he wants? And why would he want to return the Voidbringers?" Iatil didn't answer. "Well," Shallan said, rising. "Let's get to it, then. Shall we?" "Together," Iatil said. Shallan shrugged. "You can sneak along behind, or you can just go with me." She extended her hand. Iatil inspected the hand, then clasped it with her own gloved free hand in acceptance. She kept her other hand on the dagger at her side the entire time, though. Shallan flipped through the instructions Marais had left as the oversized palanquin lurched along toward Dalinar's war camp. Iatil sat across from Shallan, legs tucked beneath her, watching with beady masked eyes. The woman wore simple trousers and a shirt, such that Shallan had originally mistaken her for a boy that first time. Her presence was thoroughly unsettling. "A madman," Shallan said, flipping to the next page of instructions. "Marais is this interested in a simple madman?" "Dalinar and the king are interested," Eatil said. So then are we. There did seem to be some sort of cover-up involved. The madman had arrived in the custody of a man named Bordin, a servant whom Dalinar had stationed in Kolinar years ago. Moraes' information indicated that this Bordin was no simple messenger, but instead one of Dalinar's most trusted footmen. He had been left behind in Alethkar to spy on the Queen, or so the Ghostbloods inferred. But why would someone need to keep an eye on the Queen? The briefing didn't say. This Bordin had come to the Shattered Plains in haste a few weeks ago, bearing the madman and other mysterious cargo. Shallan's charge was to find out who this madman was and why Dalinar had hidden him away in a monastery with strict instructions that nobody was to be allowed access, save specific Ardents. "Your master knows more about this," Shallan said, "than he is telling me."
"My master?" Eatil asked.
"Moraes." The woman laughed.
"You mistake. He is not my master. He is my student."
"In what?" Shallan asked. Eatil stared at her with a level gaze and gave no reply. "Why the mask?" Shallan asked, leaning forward. "What does it mean? Why do you hide?"
"I have many times asked myself," Eatil said, "why those of you here go about so brazenly with features exposed to all who would see them. My mask reserves myself. Besides, it gives me the ability to adapt."
Shallan sat back, thoughtful.
"You are willing to ponder," Eatil said, "rather than asking question after question. This is good. Your instincts, however, must be judged. Are you the hunter, or are you the quarry?"
"Neither," Shallan said immediately.
"All are one or the other."
The palanquin's porters slowed. Shallan peeked out the curtains and found that they had finally reached the edge of Dalinar's war camp. Here, soldiers at the gate stopped each person in line, waiting to enter.
"How will you get us in?" Eatil asked as Shallan closed the curtains. "High Prince Colin has grown cautious of late, with assassins appearing in the night. What lie will gain us access to his realm?"
Delightful, she thought, revising her list of tasks. Shallan not only had to infiltrate the monastery and discover information about this madman, she had to do it without revealing too much about herself, or what she could do, to Eatil. She had to think quickly. The soldiers at the front called for the palanquin to approach. Light Eyes wouldn't be required to wait in the ordinary line, and the soldiers would assume this nice vehicle had someone rich inside. Taking a deep breath, Shallan removed her hat, pulled her hair forward over her shoulder, then pushed her face out of the curtains so that her hair hung down before her outside the palanquin. At the same moment, she withdrew her illusion and pulled the curtains closed behind her head, tight against her neck, to prevent Eatil from seeing the transformation. The porters were Parshmen, and she doubted the Parshmen would say anything about what they saw her do. Their light-eyed master was turned away, fortunately. Her palanquin wobbled up to the front of the line, and the guards started when they saw her. They waved her through immediately. The face of Adolin's betrothed was well known by this point. Now, how to get Vale's appearance back on? There were people on the street here. She wasn't about to breathe stormlight while hanging out the window.
"Pattern," she whispered. "Go make a noise at the window on the other side of the palanquin."
Tin had drilled into her the need to make a distracting motion with one hand while palming an object with the other. The same principle might work here. A sharp yelp sounded from the other window. Shallan moved her head back into the palanquin with a quick motion, breathing out stormlight. She flipped the curtains in a diverting way and obscured her face with the hat as she put it on. Eatil looked back toward her from the window where the yelp had sounded, but Shallan was Vale again, She settled back, meeting Iatil's gaze. Had the smaller woman seen? They rode in silence for a moment.
You bribed the guards ahead of time, Iatil finally guessed. I would know how you did this. Colin's men are difficult to bribe. You got to one of the supervisors, perhaps?
Shallan smiled in what she hoped was a frustrating way. The palanquin continued on toward the war camp's temple, a part of Dalinar's camp that she'd never visited. Actually, she hadn't been to visit Sabariel's Ardents very often either, though when she had gone, she'd found them surprisingly devout, considering who owned them. She peeked out the window as they approached. Dalinar's temple grounds were as plain as she would have expected. Gray-robed Ardents passed the palanquin in pairs or small groups, mixing among people of all stations. Those had come for prayers, instruction, or advice. A good temple, properly equipped, could provide each of these things and more. Dark eyes from almost any non could come to be taught a trade, exercising their divine right to learn, as mandated by the heralds. Lesser light eyes came to learn trades as well, and the higher dons came to learn the arts, or progress in their callings to please the Almighty. A large population of Ardents like this one would have true masters in every art and trade. Perhaps she should come and seek Dalinar's artists for training. She winced, wondering where she would find time for such a thing. What with courting Adolin, infiltrating the Ghost Bloods, researching the Shattered Plains, and doing Sabariel's ledgers, it was a wonder she had time to sleep. Still, it felt impious of her to expect success in her duties while ignoring the Almighty. She did need to have more concern for such things. "And what is the Almighty to think of you?" she wondered. "And the lies you're growing so proficient at producing?" Honesty was among the divine attributes of the Almighty, after all, which everyone was